In this episode of Startups for the Rest of Us, Mike and I discuss how to rank number one for a high-volume organic keyword in under 3 months. This is Startups for the Rest of Us, episode 338. Welcome to Startups for the Rest of Us, the podcast that helps developers, designers, and entrepreneurs be awesome at building, launching, and growing software products, whether you've built your first product or you're just thinking about it. I'm Rob.
And I'm Mike.
And we're here to share our experiences to help you avoid the same mistakes we made. So where this week, sir?
Well, I'm spending most of my time these days working on support issues. And as I onboard people more often, what I'm finding is that there are certain usability issues that keep coming up and I have to keep going back and either help people get through them and then go see what it takes to fix them or, you know, just kind of like implement the workarounds for them. And then on the other side of it is also like fixing some outright bugs that I found, which were not obvious. Most of them are just little things like sorting issues or stuff like that that's just affecting the UI. But it's going pretty well. Well, so far, kind of exciting, I guess.
Yeah, there's two sides to this, right? It's like on the one hand, you don't want to be spending time, you know, working on this stuff and trying to work out kinks and improving usability and all that stuff, because you just wish it was done. But on the flip side, you know that these are problems that at scale are going to be even worse, right? At 50, 100, or 1,000 users, you need to fix them now. And so there's like, you know, there's that needing to invest the time, but also it feeling like really productive, you know, and really, I don't know, like you're ironing out the rough burrs, the rough edges of the product and just like smoothing it out over time. And I think that this is where you want to be, right? You don't want to be, you know, where you were whatever 6 months ago and you have zero customers and zero people using it. And it's like, you don't know what you should be working on technically, you know, and you're kind of flailing around and it's like now there's people using it and it's probably pretty obvious what you should be fixing, you know, at what point in time.
Yeah, as you put it, like the rough edges, like that's kind of what I'm spending part of my time on and then figuring out how to fix it. Like it's one thing to know what is busted and where you need to spend your time, but it's another to like figure out how to do it so that it's more clear. Because like obviously, like you wouldn't design a product that you thought was confusing, but at the same time, it's like when other people get in there and use it, they weren't inside your head when you designed it. So they don't have the same perspective.
On my end, this is actually a pretty good week for us. We turned the corner on some scaling challenges that we've been working on we've been working on them for years. You know, they just come back every 6 months. You get just enough ahead of them that you scale up again, and then they, you know, they rear their ugly head. So every time maybe it's 2 to 3x the user base, we see stuff again. And, you know, in the early days, it was like, well, just add an index to the database or add more hardware. But you hit a point where you kind of start exceeding the physical bounds of a single database. You know, even if you'll get a quarter or a half a terabyte of RAM and disk IOPS through the roof and it's expensive and you still just, it isn't making enough of a difference. And so we've had to circle back and we attack it from a bunch of different directions. We've re-architected some things. We've actually piped some new Relic stuff that allows us to really see some detailed traces. And we're seeing, you know, there are some query issues, but there's code issues that creep in as you write more stuff that where you're doing N+1 queries in essence. And so we've just started to see those creep in. And as we've been pulling them out, we're seeing these incremental bumps and we pushed like, it was like 3 or 4 developers pushed 7 different performance improvements over the past. Maybe there was like a week where we did 7 and then another this week we've probably done 3 or 4. And it's just little by little, it is just making the throughput so much higher, so much faster. So, you know, we're sending between 2 and 4 times the volume of email right now than we were even, you know, 3 or 4 weeks ago. It's pretty crazy when you think about it that way. Like it was a bit of work to get there, but like once this stuff started rolling, it really made a big difference.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that, like those performance improvements and that. I just rolled one out this week where people can go through and like they can identify who has sent them emails and who they've received emails from and how many of each of those in each direction. And there was a performance issue earlier where it was just a little bit slower than it should have been and wasn't returning all the results because there were so many, and just pushed out a fix this week where like it's lightning fast now. And it's amazing how much better like the experience of the app is just from those like little improvements.
Yeah, it's super cool. Sometimes it's noticeable by users and other times it's not, but you know that like this would, even if users aren't noticing it yet, that it's eventually going to catch up with you. And so it's nice to get that done. I remember the days where we'd have a customer with 300,000 or 400,000 emails in their account and they'd do a big send and we'd be like, man, we can totally handle this, but as long as another big sender doesn't send at the same time. And now that's just, it's just commonplace. I mean, for 3 lists of 300,000 to 500,000 to send within minutes of each other. We've gotten to the point now where it's like we can hammer through that stuff. So it really is just like climbing that mountain and doing things that you never think you're going to have to do. Denormalizing databases, starting to shard things. Right now, considering stripping a table out and literally putting it into a different kind of data store. I mean, just crazy stuff you would never architect from the start when you're building an app. It would be gold plating when you don't have any users. But when you do hit scale and you have tens of thousands of people using your app, it is necessary.
Yeah, I was talking to somebody at, I think it was a Help Scout at MicroConf, and he was asking me about how some of the backend stuff of Bluetick was done. And I didn't tell him because it just didn't occur to me, but like the backend data store for the mail, like I rewrote it 4 times over the course of like 8 months just because it needed to go bigger and faster, and it just wasn't doing it at the time. So yeah, it's crazy how like the stuff that you need to do in order to make it work that from an engineering perspective you wouldn't ever want to do because you're like, oh, like I want to have like referential integrity on these things, and at some point you realize that like speed trumps that.
Yeah, someone, you know, we interviewed a scaling architect this week. We have an open position for that right now to just help handle this, you know, because we're trying to build the product, and this really is a completely separate discipline, right, of being able to scale things to this level. And one thing he brought up, which I hadn't heard of, but as soon as he said it, it made sense. He brought up CAP theorem, C-A-P. C is consistency, A is availability, and P is performance, and you get to pick two. And he said in most databases, you know, or most apps, you go for C and P, and your availability is 99 point, you know, whatever percent. And it's fine because if you were to go down for an hour, like it's not catastrophic. But if you pick the other two, it's just trade-offs. But he said at a certain point, once you scale, you know, there's a bunch of big companies in town like Target and Best Buy who run these massive e-commerce sites. And he was saying like, once you scale one of those sites, you have to give up some consistency because you have to have availability because it's millions of dollars per hour, and you have to have performance because you can't, obviously being slow is cost of money. And so you give up consistency and you have to start dealing with that. You have to start writing code and you have to start thinking about what happens when it all doesn't sync up. You know, there isn't referential integrity in this certain instance, or there isn't data consistency, and the reports are just not going to be exactly match across everything. So it's pretty fascinating. So today we're going to talk about how to rank number one for a high volume organic keyword in under 3 months. And this is based on an article on moz.com, actually on their blog. It's a case study that Pipedrive co-wrote with Moz, and it was the former director of content marketing at Pipedrive. It was where the case study took place. And this article is detailed. This thing is very long, so we actually won't be able to cover in depth every step, but there are 8 steps that they talk about. And we'll, at a minimum, we will cover the 8 steps and then go into as much detail as we can given the time constraints. And then you, of course, can come to the show notes at startupsfortherestofus.com. This is episode 338, and click on the link if you want to read the entire article. This thing, I didn't do a word count, but it's got to be like 4,000 or 5,000 words. It's pretty cool. So the article starts by outlining the 8 steps, and we'll go through those one at a time. They talk about how much more difficult SEO has gotten, and that SEO these days is much more about content and content marketing, whereas it used to be more about just straight up link building, and it was a lot easier to game, and Google has done a really good job of, you know, essentially closing those loopholes, much to the chagrin of a lot of marketers I know. So let's dive right in with these 8 steps. They basically said they got a top search engine ranking position, which is a SERP spot. It was the focus of a 3-person team for the better part of 3 months to get this. So it's pretty crazy. They invested a lot of energy in it. And step one is to find a good topic, one that has significant keyword volume. And he goes right into the Google Keyword Planner, where he said when they ran the search, they picked a keyword with 9,900 searches per month. And we'll go into why that's enough later on. But now I think the Keyword Planner, it doesn't even give you that close. It gives you like a 1 to 10K range, which is like horrendously unhelpful. And then he said the same keyword had a search volume of 1.7 to 2.9K in the Moz Keyword Explorer. In case you have a Moz account, they give you tools to help do this kind of stuff, to help rank for keywords. And he looked at a chart that Moz had published, and they said that if you rank first for a term, you're likely to get, it was like 30 to 32% of the clicks. If you rank second, it's about 14%. And if you're third, it's about 10%. And so they figured that if they could rank first for this 9,900 search term, that they would get around 3,000 visitors a month for a top position. And if they could convert 5% into leads, which I'm assuming they are trying to email capture, I'm assuming they're thinking about that, that would net them 1,800 leads a year, which they, you know, said it would justify the time. And so that's kind of the first part of the first step of finding a good topic is to make sure there's enough volume that if you rank first, given your whatever it is, your email capture rate or your trial rate or whatever, you know, whatever it is you think you can do, that it's going to be justified time-wise and financially.
I think the thing I take away from this select and right topic is more about doing the back of the envelope calculations to figure out what you should be going after based on what your return on that's going to be. And it's not so much about a specific raw number that you're going for in terms of the search volume. It's more about how many of those people you can convert to leads. Because if your conversion rate is higher than other people's based on your content, then target search terms that have lower search volume because they're going to be worth just as much or more to you than they would to be to somebody else, assuming that you can convert them better. So I kind of like that idea of starting from this side of it and not focusing solely on what should we focus on for content or what should our headline be or anything like that. It's really about what your ROI is going to be on that.
So continuing with step one, which was finding a good topic, the second thing they looked at was to pick a winnable topic. And this is actually where Moz is really handy. He said, for example, if you're trying to rank for content marketing, the first page is dominated by the Content Marketing Institute, and they have a domain authority of 84. And that is very high. It's a scale of 1 to 100. And so what they did is they looked at Mozbar, which is just a like a Chrome plugin, and you can check domain authority and page authority on the fly. It like overlays them in Google. There's a screenshot of it here in the post. And so they looked at a bunch of different keywords that had search volumes between, I think it was like at least, it was like 3 to 10,000 is kind of where they were thinking. And so they were seeing, you know, searching for like sales management. They were seeing page authorities in the 30s and 40s, domain authorities, there was, you know, 40s, 70s, 30s, and 20s. So given that some of these are, you know, 20s and 30s, they knew that they could kind of get in. And then they used Moz Keyword Explorer to look at the actual difficulty versus the potential scores. And they kind of outlined some loose ranges of like, you want your opportunity to be above 50 and your potential to be above a certain amount. So there's obviously a bunch of different ways to do this. I have always used Moz for this kind of stuff. I know there are other tools that do it, but their data is solid and they've been around for a long time. And so at this point, they wound up with four keywords: sales techniques, sales process, sales management, sales forecast. One of them has 4,400 searches, and then it goes up to in the 8s and 9,000s. And they said any of the above would work for them. But for added impact, they added a third and final filter to help them pick the keyword, and that is strategic relevance. And so if you're going to turn your visitors into leads, they say it's important to focus on keywords that are strategically relevant to your conversion goals. And in their case, sales management is the optimal keyword because Pipedrive is a sales management tool. And so it described them perfectly. And in contrast, sales techniques and sales forecast are keywords a salesperson would search for, not a sales leader or a small business owner who would be the decision maker that would decide to buy Pipedrive. So this, it's pretty in-depth here, but it's something to think about, right? If you see a keyword with a low difficulty and high search throughput you think you can rank for, it may not actually be that helpful, right? If it's not strategically relevant to your business.
I like the fact that they point out in the article that you're looking for a competitive score of under 50 and a potential or opportunity score above 50. And I don't know, is that one's, that side of it's so important to me, or at least it wasn't when I started out, but like knowing that under a score of 50 for the difficulty, that's a lot easier to rank for and it is possible to get it than going over that. I mean, even trying for like things that are in the 50s or 60s, those can be very, very difficult to get, especially if you're going against certain types of companies. You know, trying to rank against them for those terms can be really, really hard. But anything below 50 is not actually all that difficult to do, especially if you are kind of limited in the amount of time that you can spend on it and your budget. Those things are definitely attainable for the average person.
So step two is to write a badass piece of content. And that's the words they use in the article. This is broken up into multiple parts. The first is extremely thorough research of the existing ones that rank in the top. And they kind of looked through them and figured out what works, what doesn't, what do they like, both from a reader perspective and with an SEO eye in mind. And so one of the pages had way too many headlines. It was over keyword stuffed, basically. And then they looked for anomalies. And one thing that caught their eye was that two of the top 10 results were dedicated to the keyword sales manager. And so they realized, all right, we know that we're going to want to talk about sales managers in our article. And then this was one I hadn't seen before. They went all the way down to the bottom of the SERPs, and there's a related searches thing that Google puts there. And so they looked through for those terms and they realized, we probably want to include some of these in there. And so part two of this, of writing the piece of content, is the actual content creation. They say you don't need to be a subject matter expert, but if you do a lot of research, you can put something together. And they go through some steps on how to write, you know, like that I don't think are super relevant here, but it's like, don't multitask and work alone and put on some playlists and such. Personally, I like Spotify's Deep Focus. They have a different one. And then they talk about going through and adding images and adding headers and subsections and all that. And that really caps out step two. As I said, they go into more detail, but it's a lot of stuff about how, it's almost like its own little article on just how to write a decent piece of content.
Yeah, the one piece that I took away from this is paying attention to the part at the bottom where it says searches related to, in this case, it was sales management. And you can use those for like kind of offshoots. So if you wanted to create dedicated pages for each of those, in this case, I've got objectives of sales management and then sales management PDF. Those are the types of things that you could target as like a secondary page with a different article and trying to drive related traffic to those pages as well. So I think that's a perfectly viable strategy, especially when it comes to things like where people are searching for PDFs, and you can give them a PDF of a template or something like that. And lots of people have used that strategy where it's like they drive people to that page using SEO because they're specifically looking for something that they can download, and you give it to them in exchange for an email address. And that's, you know, one way to drive up the level of your email list.
Step three is to optimize on-page SEO and engagement metrics. And so this is the steps they took to optimize the on-page SEO. Number one is to fix the title. They wanted traffic from people searching for keywords related to sales management, such as sales management definition, sales management process, sales management strategies, sales management resources. And so their headline or their title and their H1 tag is sales management definition, process, strategies, and resources. So they covered them all right there in the headline. It says Google is now smart enough to know that a single article can cover multiple related keywords. And so the comment delimited list, they said, you know, should work for them.
I wonder how long it is before Google realizes that people are keyword stuffing in the headlines now.
I know. Well, and it's interesting because if that's all you're doing, it's not going to work, you know, but it's all this other stuff they did that propels that to work. You know, it's writing this massive piece of content, spending months doing all this optimization. So part two of that is to fix section headings. So one example is instead of writing like sales management definition as a header, they actually wrote the header as, it's a subheading, but it's like, so what is sales management? ? So it's an actual question a reader might ask. One, it makes the article easier and better to read, but two, it's a natural question, which makes it more likely to rank for voice searches and for Google's answer. So this is good stuff. They said they also peppered related keywords in the headers throughout the article. Later on, they realized they keyword stuffed basically, and they actually go back and roll this back a bit. And then the third step was to improve content engagement, like they have colons and line breaks and, you know, they have internal links and outgoing links. They just make things kind of easier to skim and easier to read. The fourth thing, I had heard this as kind of a rumor that this might exist, you know, in the Google algorithm, but it's to shorten the URL. There's this graph they include where the longer your URL, the less likely you are to rank for number one. Fascinating. So they have these really long blog URLs and they just shorten this way, way down. They essentially just have sales-management, you know, aside from the date in the URL. And then they improve the keyword density. So, you know, obviously including the keyword in the first 100 words of your content is kind of a well-known thing, but then they talk about going through it and adding a glossary at the bottom so they can include a few more keywords. And they do point out how important it is to make these as organic as possible, because otherwise it looks and feels like keyword stuffing, and Google and users are pretty smart about this stuff. And so they said as a result of the kind of the on-page keyword optimization that their traffic went up, and they have a, you know, a screenshot of 19,000 page views. And as they say, we over-optimized keyword density in the beginning, which slightly hurt rankings. But once we stopped this, we changed things around and saw an immediate improvement. We'll get to that, you know, a step or two later. So they don't show that 19,000 page views. They don't show what the time frame is on that, but they did indicate that this definitely had a kind of a positive impact on the post.
You know, I do wonder if adding what is blank and then, you know, like adding in the keyword is something that Google specifically looks for. And the reason I think that is, or at least I kind of have an inkling of that, is when I was doing Audit Shark, I had a bunch of pages that said, what is blank? And so, like, for example, what is compliance management? And if you look around for compliance just in general, like, that's a very difficult thing to rank for, just because there's all these different compliance institutions and it's government regulations, and it's really difficult to rank against those. But if you go out and search for what is compliance management, Audit Shark's website actually ranks higher than the FDIC.gov website for what is compliance management system. So it's
that's crazy. Should you sell that? You should sell it to the FDIC. So, hey guys, I have this site that ranks above you.
Right. I wonder if that is something that specifically Google looks for. You know, what is blank and whatever that keyword is.
Yep. Totally. I would totally imagine that's part of it. I think as more and more of these voice searches are happening and the Google Answers stuff, I think it's become more common for people to search like that as it's worked better. So it kind of makes sense. So step four is to build internal links to the article. And that means linking to this article from other articles that you have. And it talks about how Googlebot discovers your content, you know, by crawling your links. And it also tells Google that this page is important if a lot of your pages link to it. And so you don't want to just put a link in a header or footer. You actually want to link from individual pages in your site and kind of pick the right keywords to link through. And so you look for high traffic, you look for high page authority, and then, you know, you can do, they have a kind of site colon search you can do on your own website to find these keywords that you want to use that appear in your other posts, and then you can link them out. And this gives you just that basis of page authority on this new article. And step five is going out and finding external link targets, meaning external sites that will link to you.
So just to kind of clarify what Robin said, this is a little bit different than putting like a footer on your website and having pages that you basically put a site map in place. This is specifically looking through your site where you refer to these terms, whether it's in your blog posts or in different articles or white paper pages, point those back to the page that you're trying to rank for. So it's very slightly different, but it kind of achieves the same thing. It gets those internal links back and forth inside of your website.
And as I said, step five is finding external websites to link to this new article. And they outline using Open Site Explorer, which is a Moz thing, I think. And they allow you to crawl the top 10 search results for this term and then look at those backlinks. And so they dug through a few pages of that. They built up a list of a few hundred prospect websites they thought might link to it. And it's a very raw list. So then they only look at domain authority above 30. They eliminated sites that are on free hosts like Blogspot and WordPress.com and put it in an Excel file. And then they go through finding the email addresses for people on these sites. So they used Email Hunter, which is at hunter.io. And then they did their outreach. And yeah, they don't go specifically through what text they used or whatever. This is kind of a slog, right? It's cold outreach. And I'm sure that most people, because I get these links, you know, these emails, and I just delete them. But I think if you have a compelling case, apparently, whether it's the Pipedrive name or whether it's just their approach, they said they just outreached like crazy. And they used tools like, or you can use one of these tools like MixMax or LeadIQ or Tout, Prospectify. I suppose you could use Bluetick as well. Do you allow outreach like this?
Yeah, it is, because it's going out through your own email server, so you could use that. I was actually going to recommend LinkSpy, which is linkspy.com from Christoph Engelhardt, who's been to MicroConf several times, been our scribe on a number of occasions, and taken copious notes. So I would probably point to that instead.
Instead of Open Site Explorer, right? Because LinkSpy shows you your competitors' backlinks.
Yes, it does. And you can use it in conjunction with it as well. But I mean, the LinkSpy also has the built-in capabilities to reach out to people who have those other sites. So you could use it to do that outreach step.
Yep, that's a great idea. I'm glad you pointed that out. I remember him building that in. And I think he has like boilerplate templates and everything to make it like super simple. So
Yep. All the templates and stuff are there already.
Awesome. So this whole outreach step, I'm actually going to skip. I'm going to say you can look at it if you'd like, or you should just go use linkspy.com. That's links with an S at the end and then another S for spy. Step 7 of 8 is they say be prepared to guest post. Guest posting, and then when you guest post, you know, you can link back to you know, within the content of your guest post, you can link back to this article. I was doing a ton of guest posting with the aid of, you know, the Growth Marketer Zach that I'd hired with Drip, and it was doing stuff for us. It was sending traffic that converted. It was also building up, you know, some SEO juice in our blog. And guest posting is most certainly not dead. I know at one point Google said they were going to start penalizing guest posters, but, you know, high quality posts on high quality domains, we have never seen any, you know, any negative repercussions from all of that.
Yeah, I'm not sure how they would really find out other than a manual review that it was done by somebody else. I mean, it just seems kind of crazy. I mean, don't get me wrong, like Google's got some really smart people that are way more smart way more smarter than I am.
Nice.
But yeah, I don't know how you would do that at scale. Like,
I think it's like byline stuff, right? You can say like, this post was written by blah. And, or this was a guest article. This was a guest post. Like, there tends to be certain phrases that are used. And I mean, they use machine learning, so they could certainly, you know, they're like translating languages to hundreds of crazy, exotic other languages. And so I feel like this is a pretty solvable problem using technology like that.
All right. Well, let's leave our idiocy in the dust and go on a step.
Totally. The eighth and final step is something I'd never heard of. They say fine-tuning content with TF-IDF. TF-IDF. And it's term frequency dash inverse document frequency. I won't really go into what that means here, but basically it's a way to analyze a document to figure out what are the important terms based on how many times they're used and in what context. So they just simply counted up the number of times that sales management occurred in their article. They said it occurred 48 times, and their article was 2,500 words, and they thought that was just way too much. And so they hypothesized that they were actually being not penalized, but that they weren't ranking as high as they should because they were looking like they were keyword stuffing. So they backed it off to 20 and they replaced it with terms that have high lexical relevance to sales management, but were not the exact phrase sales management. And they said that it bumped them up. And so their organic page views went from zero when they started to over 5,000 in just over 8 months. So they ranked number one for the term in three, I guess, that's based on the headline of the article, and then got these 5,000 recurring page views in 8 months.
I think if you're trying to be objective about this, it's a little difficult to take every single piece of this at face value when it walks through and says, this is what we did and this is exactly what happened, because there's so many factors that come into play. Like, over the course of 8 months, there's a lot of different things that can happen. So even though they like backed off the number of times that sales management came into the article at a certain time, and yes, like the search volume went up after that, but it's hard to say that that's exactly why, because if you look at the graph that they show, it went up for 2 months and then it went down and then it kind of meandered a little bit and then it went back up. So, you know, over that time period, lots of different things can happen, and a lot of them are just completely out of your control. You don't have any control over the rest of the internet. And so it's hard to say definitively, like, hey, we did X and Y happened, but there's certainly correlations that you can make between them and to say, this is the general direction that we wanted things to go. These are the things we did. And that, yes, it went that way, but you can't put like a velocity on those things or a hard metric on every single one of these things.
Yeah, I mean, that's SEO. You know, that's been organic SEO since it became a thing. It's gotten a lot harder over time. It used to be easier to game. But you're right, there is no way to know that this specific change actually did this, or was it just coincidentally something else? You know, it so much of it is correlation. And if you do it enough times, and you can say, oh, I'm confident that it's causation until Google does their next update. But yeah, you're never going to know for sure, which is tough. With that said, there are these best practices. And I mean, there's a lot of things in this article as I read through that I thought, yes, that's what I would do. That's what I would do. And then there were a bunch of things that were, you know, I kind of called them out. I was like, yeah, I hadn't heard this, but this must be kind of a newer thing. I haven't been knee deep in SEO for, I mean, maybe it was, you know, it was 2 or 3 years ago. I was doing it for Drip. And it was a couple years before that I did it for Hittail. And I tend to do it in little, you know, small bursts of, I get up to speed and then I do it for, you know, make a bunch of decisions and then kind of move away and work on the product. But, you know, people like this who are literally doing it full time, they're going to always have been doing so many experiments that they're going to be kind of at the bleeding edge of these tactics. And I think there's something to be said here. Like, yeah, you could game Google and you can try to get a piece of crap article up to the top of the results. But it's like, I've always felt like we should all be trying to make the internet a better place. And even when I have used SEO and I've optimized to get there, I always thought my content was amazing. Like, it was really high quality content. I would either write it myself or I'd pay a lot of money to have a good writer do it. So I feel like if you're trying to push crap to the top of the results, like, don't bother, you know, don't do it. It just makes the results crappy, right? And it makes the internet a worse place to be. I guess that's kind of my recommendation. Is there's certain people who say, you know, you shouldn't do SEO at all because it just pollutes the internet. And I believe that you can do SEO, but in an ethical and high quality way.
Yeah, and that's not really any different than how some people view marketing. Like, oh, I don't want to do marketing because it feels sleazy, or I don't want to do sales because it feels scummy. And it's, you know, SEO is exactly the same way. I mean, you kind of have to do some level of marketing in order to get your product out there. And there's wrong ways to do it and there's right ways to do it. And, you know, this article outlines a mechanism that works so long as you have content that is appropriate to be promoted. So with that said, I think we'll wrap it up today. If you have a question for us, you can call it into our voicemail number at 1-888-801-9690, or you can email it to us at questions@startupsforrestofus.com. Our theme music is an excerpt from We're Out of Control by Moot, used under Creative Commons. Subscribe to us in iTunes by searching for Startups, and visit startupsforrestofus.com for full transcript of each episode. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.